Welcome to Your Weekly Dose podcast, the only show for those who missed the Mark and Brian radio program. Coming to you from Orange County in Southern California. Hear it happen live without a net every Saturday morning at 10 a.m. Pacific Standard Time. Download past episodes directly from our website, yourweeklydose.com. But if you're on the go, subscribe through iTunes, Podbean, Stitcher, and make sure you leave a review. Now, here's this week's show.
Off my pants.
Uh-oh.
I'm going to dance around in my underwear.
Ladies, tidy whities. Well, good morning, everybody. Happy Saturday to all of you. It's a sausage fest today, basically. In the room, we got Steve Silva.
Yes, we do.
Producer Zach.
Hi, how are you?
Intern Christopher.
Howdy-ho there.
And I am Sean Roberts, and together we are Your Weekly Dose Podcast.
And thank you for joining us today as we are streaming live to you from Orange County, California. We are the only podcast who continues the radio traditions of Mark and Brian. If you miss them as much as we do, then you tuned in to the right show.
But this podcast isn't just for Mark and Brian listeners. It's also for those who are looking for a podcast just to have fun and enjoy good old-fashioned morning radio-style program.
And for those of you who have recently found us, thank you. Thank you for joining our family. We're so glad that you listened to the show.
Absolutely. Today's show, we got a couple of cool things for you. Mainly is today's guest is going to be a wonderful man who has created the Rock and Roll Fantasy Camp. And also who has produced many, many tours that you might recognize as we do the interview today. And that is Mr. David Fischoff. Also today, we will have the most adulterous states and a few listener emails as well. So take care of that for you.
All right. You can always interact with the show by calling in, or if you like, you can comment on our website, yourweeklydose.com, or send a message to us on Twitter and Instagram at yourweeklydose1. Say hello to us on Facebook at Your Weekly Dose, or if you want to send us a personal message, you can email us at yourweeklydose1@gmail.com.
And you can always download the show for free from our website, but you can also subscribe to the show through iTunes, iHeartRadio, or Spotify. Just search for Your Weekly Dose, and most importantly, rate and review the show. You know, tell the world what you think of us. Of course, today's theme song is Good Old Time Rock and Roll by the great Bob Seger and the Silver Bullet Band. I always love Bob Seger. Great artist, great songs, night moves, yeah. Hollywood nights.
You know. A nice, unique voice.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. And remember, guys, any music that we play here on our show, you can always go to our sponsor, Amazon, and get the music from there, download it, purchase it from there. They carry everybody, you know, which is really great. Just go to our website, yourweeklydose.com, click on the banner, and bookmark it, and then go shopping for any kind of music or anything else that you need. You know, doesn't matter. Just like that. That's simple.
Like that. And they bring it right to you.
Exactly. So very, very easy.
Shut up and take my money.
Absolutely. And of course, we want to welcome Delmarva Radio. And of course, also, we are now syndicating at Lime City Radio. So hello, Indiana.
Yeah, where it's in the 30s today.
Ooh, you guys are
Indiana.
Cold.
And then on the East Coast, Delmarva.
Steve Silva.
Steve Silva.
On the East Coast, it's in the 40s, so it's kind of cold. I read a thing where, of course I didn't write it down, but there's a cold front, cold thing that comes down and is going to dip down, clear down to Florida and back up over the United States, and it's going to be down like, you know, really cold temperatures.
That's when it gets scary, is when you get all that cold air from Canada.
Yeah.
You know, coming down, and it goes down that far south.
And everybody in Florida starts going, hey, it's cold, eh?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
In New York, they're going, hey, it's cold. You know, of course, it's a little bit different there, so. Anyway. Well, should we catch up with each other real quick?
Okay.
Let's do that. Yeah. Well, Amber's not here today, unfortunately. Our other co-host, Amber, has a little bit of a scare going around. And of course, as we all know, COVID is numbers are keep going up.
Out of sight now.
And it's scary. And it's really scary. Amber told us last night there was a friend of hers that she's hung out with a couple of times. But it turns out he got tested for COVID, is now positive. Mm-hmm. His family has it now. So Amber is now staying away from us to make sure she doesn't bring it to us here, getting herself tested again. Poor thing.
I know.
So it's been a little tough for her. She's kind of nervous and everything, and I really don't blame her. So, but anyway, but that's why Amber's not here though. But real quick, Zach, how was your week, bud?
It's pretty much been this. Talk. Speaking of COVID, on Wednesday, I had a fever of 103. Yeah. Come on, baby, do you do more than that? There you go, theater of the mind, people.
You're.
That's why I sound
hot
so
hot-blooded.
Yeah,
hot-blooded.
Yeah, that's why I sound so uppity and, you know, much more curmudgeon than usual. I
come on, you've been worse.
This week's been the first time I've been sick in years. And
that's always tough.
For everyone worried, I don't think I have COVID. I'm about 80-90% sure it's something called tonsillitis. And for those of you playing the home game, that is when your tonsils get inflamed and infected because you're an idiot like me and leaves his window open and fan blasting at night.
And for us here in Southern California, I mean, the days have been pretty warm. I mean, it's been in the 70s and everything else. But at night, I mean, it's dipping down to the 40s.
Yeah.
So it does get very cold here at times, too. You know, it kind of feels like, oh, I don't know, we're in Delmarva, I guess.
It gets like 40 and 50 degree difference between the daytime and the nighttime. It's just something that affects you.
It does. It really does. I mean, I've got nasal problems because of it, too, and everything. My nasal cavities swell up, so... Unfortunately, Zach got a little bit sick, whatever, was a little bit worried. But like I said, it's, you know, the tonsillitis thing, is, I mean, it's kind of good because at least you know the tonsils are actually doing their job.
Yeah.
You know.
Or trying
Which I still
to.
Need to get them taken out.
Yeah. I still got mine in.
I don't want mine. You can have yours. I don't want mine anymore. No. It's like swallowing razor blades at this point. So
that's
the
tough part.
So I woke up to do iHeart Radio at 5 a.m. on Monday, and I knew there was something wrong. I'm like... I feel tired. I feel really, really like I'm not feeling congesty. I'm not again. This is how I know I don't think I have COVID. My smell is fine. My taste is fine. I don't have any coughing. I don't have any sneezing. I don't have none of that. No nausea. Right. I just have like fever chills. I'm like, okay, maybe I got a little fever. Then the next day, now I really got a fever. And then all of a sudden, I feel my right side of my tonsils are just swelling.
Yeah.
And I go, oh God, here we go again with this. And I've lost a couple pounds because I just haven't been able to eat.
But that's good.
Yeah.
That's the silver lining, so to speak.
Lord knows I need it. But, I mean, what are we on Saturday? I'm getting better now. I took my temperature this morning. It was like 97.6.
That's kind of normal.
So you're getting cold now.
Good Lord.
Gotta love it. Yeah.
A little delayed reaction. I think I'm going to be fine. I think by Sunday I should be pretty much cleared up.
Like I said earlier, Listerine, the gold one, which is the original.
The yucky kind?
Yeah. It's actually a antiseptic. So if you gargle with that, it'll help with it and everything. So, and help get rid of the bacteria, whatever.
Kind of sounds like a human bong.
I thought you were doing it right now.
That's like Chewy.
that's talent to be.
Yeah,
able to
no
do
kidding. but yeah, if you do that, I mean, it'll help burn away the bacteria and everything, and help the.
You should have heard
your tonsils do what they need.
You should have heard me this morning gargling salt water, hot salt water. I'm just gargling. You just hear.
While he's gargling.
While I'm car. No, it's just.
Well, like I said, try the. Try the Listerine, dude. It'll help. It'll help out. Steve, how was your week? Anything exciting?
Actually, kind of a cool week. I did a little writing on some things. I have projects I have, and a couple of things for. We're gonna have a commercial. Hope soon. Mm-hmm. It'll be kind of cool. We can do on a regular basis.
Oh, nice. But, okay.
I watched anime, and now. I got to tell you.
Tell me, Steve.
I'm, I like anime porn and ecchi anime. It's cool. I would rather see that than live American porn because...
For those of you listening, it's called hentai. Unfortunately, I
hentai.
Know this.
Hentai and ecchi is where they don't show the genitals, but, you know, they get naked. And...
I don't think you should be admitting this.
I enjoy it. I'm a man. I'm single. I don't have, you know, someone next to me to distract me from this.
Just us.
But...
Yeah.
The last few weeks, I and it was actually even before that, I watched this movie called Your Name, which is an anime movie.
Uh-huh.
It was just amazing. It's like the number one anime film in Japan, like a couple years ago. And it's just a beautiful movie. I've talked about it before.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I've been looking into other things like that, and I found some other anime movies. Let's see, there's Your Name, Weathering With You, one called Rain, which is really cool, and then one that was a little controversial called A Silent Voice, about a deaf girl that transfers into
You
a
were talking
school.
To me about this one a few weeks back, yeah.
And immediately everybody starts abusing her and making fun of her and stuff like that, and the guy who spearheads this is like really mean to her, but then... It's just because he's just a jerk and he doesn't know how to handle it. And they end up having kind of a relationship or something later on. But it's like so poignant. And it just shows how mean kids really are to each other.
Or society can be to each other.
Yeah. And so anyway, last night I watched this really cool one. Oh, I can't think of the Japanese name, but it's the moon, as the moon, so beautiful. And it's about this little girl in this group of friends when they were just kids. She had an accident and drowned in a stream.
Oh, wow.
And later, you know, as they grew up and now they're in high school and they've separated, the groups is sort of separated in a couple of different factions and stuff. And the one guy who was devastated the most because he loved her and didn't know what to do with it. Anyway, she starts appearing to him.
Oh.
And it's like she's everywhere and she's there. And he tells his friends, and it's a story about how she can't quite leave the earth, even though she's dead.
Right.
And they get together to try to help her because there was some, she made a promise and wished for something, and they were trying to figure out what it was and everything. At the end, they get it figured out, and it's basically based on the attitude we have toward others, where we use situations to better ourselves rather than thinking of what other people need that we can help them with.
Well, one question I have for you with that type of a movie, how are the dance numbers?
Amazing.
Good. Okay.
It's amazing. Yeah. Bob Fosse would turned in his grave. It was just
okay.
Yeah.
That's what I thought. Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
Wow. Why is this? But I really love it. You can go on YouTube and just key in 10 best romantic anime. And there are guys there that's what they do on YouTube, is they take clips from all the anime films. You can get the 10 best ecchi, the
compilations, 10
best harems, just all the different kinds of anime as you can go in and it'll give you names of anime you can then go in and watch.
Some of them are really, really good movies though.
Oh,
they really are.
I tell you, still the one called Your Name is just, that's one of my favorite films of all time.
I wonder if they're going to do a sequel called My Name. You know, then his name, then her name.
Their name.
Their name.
Yeah, you don't, we wouldn't use his name or her name anymore.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, but their name.
Their name.
Our name.
Our name.
That's what I mean.
Yeah. You know, it might work out. You never
Insane.
Know. It could be a whole series.
Yeah.
You know. Yeah. Just saying. Well, this week I had kind of a little bit relaxing week. I've started, for those who don't know, I'm also involved with N-scale trains. So I've done quite a bit of laying down the layout itself and getting things going. And Right now, starting to lay down track. So if I got two areas that I need to do this bridge thing where the bridge is going across this little pond or lake or whatever that I'm creating. So kind of get all the wood stuff, whatever, to create a trestle to kind of cross it. So I've been trying to figure that out. And got a couple of friends of mine over coming over to make sure that I'm kind of doing it right. And everything, so I don't make.
Well, you're not left-handed, so.
Yeah, exactly. So that way, I don't make any mistakes here. So, but it's coming along. But I'm starting to lay down the track and get the rest of it going. Because if I do that right now, I'll have like at least what 92-98% of the of the layout done.
That sounds cool. I wish I spent the week laying track.
Let's just lay.
Yeah, baby.
Oh. Well, speaking of getting laid here, I saw this article yesterday, and I just couldn't believe it. And Zach, you're trying to figure out what song you want to put together for this thing and whatever.
Random toss? I like it.
If you want, yeah. The most adulterous states here in the U.S. The most adulterous states in the United States here. And this was done basically by Ashley Madison, you know, the company, whatever, website that says, hey, if you want to, you know, have an affair kind of a thing, whatever, this is where you come to. Really? We're going with this song?
I don't know.
Okay. It works.
I like that.
It works. Okay. So,
it's kind of sexy.
It's based upon how many users there are, divorce rate in the state, adult residents who binge drink, collective narcissism rate, and then, of course, that gives you your total score. Okay?
I like it already.
So, they did all 50, but we're only going to talk about the top five.
Ah, top five.
Which ones do you think it may be?
Well, I think California is in one of them.
No, California is not.
Not in the top five?
California is not in the top five.
I'm moving.
So I will tell you that one is in, I guess, what, the Midwest. One.
Maybe Illinois.
One is in the South, or two are, I guess, in the South. And then the last two are in on the East Coast. And one of them is actually where we actually broadcast.
Well, that would be maybe Indiana?
No.
How about Maryland?
No.
Delaware?
No.
Virginia.
Virginia comes in at number three.
Ooh.
Yeah. So basically, Ashley Madison users is 4.2 per 1,000 people. Divorce rate is 3.1 for every 1,000. Residents who binge drink, 17%. So collective narcissism rate, I don't know how they did that part, though, was 18%. Therefore, they had an adultery index score of 99.39.
That's a huge bitch. I guess out of 100?
Out of 100.
Oh, that's a pretty high score. And
a very, very
three.
High score. So one is in the South. There's a famous river named after it.
Mississippi.
Mississippi came in at number dos.
Ooh.
Number two. They came in, Ashley Madison per 1,000 was 10.2. Divorce rate was 2.7. A little bit higher than Virginia. And then their, binge drink was 12.5%. And then their collective narcissism rate was 1%, but it put them over Virginia because of the Ashley Madison users, which was 10.2 per 1,000. So that's what really put them over the edge, even though the other numbers were lower.
It's all that Cajun food. It makes everybody hot.
I think so. And they came in at 99.53 is what it is. That was their score. I'll give you the other three here. Number five was New Hampshire.
New Hampshire?
Yep.
Huh.
They had an adultery score of 93.44. North Dakota came in at 94.52.
Now, see, I would have thought someplace like that was number one because there's nothing else to do there.
Well, talking about nothing else to do, so New Hampshire's number five, North Dakota number four. We said Virginia was number three. Mississippi's number two. Of all the states, Wyoming came in at number one.
Huh.
With basically, Ashley Madison was 3.8 per thousand people. Divorce rate was a 3.8 per thousand people. Adult residents who binge drink was 16.9, so almost at 17%. That's what kind of did it for them, which also did it for Virginia, too. But their collective narcissism rate was 12%, and that puts them at number one with 99.77.
That's huge.
So if you want to have an affair...
They got a 500,000 people in Wyoming.
If you want to have an affair, those are your five best states to go to.
Apparently.
So, yeah.
I have friends in Wyoming, so...
Well, we should go visit them and see...
What happened? Oh, you guys don't visit anybody.
Hey.
Hey.
That's because COVID's going on right now.
Hit a nerve, did I?
Believe me, if COVID wasn't going on, Steve and I would be on a flight after the show.
To Wyoming.
To Wyoming.
Okay. Did you know that it's the 10th largest state, but it has the least population of all the states?
Well, it's all nothing but wilderness up there, too.
Yeah.
And you guys want to go?
Well, yeah.
I want to go get a load of the Grand Tetons, you know what I mean.
And those valleys, too. Mm. Hey. Well, here's something. Well, here's something for us also, guys. Some listener emails.
Oh, that's my cue. Sorry.
Letters, we get letters, we get letters almost every day.
Every single, every day, every single day, getting some mail. Got some letters.
Brian Seacrest, God!
Love that. All right, dear Your Weekly Dose crew,
hi.
Have been listening for quite some time, but never called in or wrote to you guys till now. Thank you for another year of carrying the M&B traditions. I have heard all the M&B family member interviews, and all of them are right. You guys are truly carrying the torch of a show that we miss. Great job, listener Margaret.
Yay! So,
real quick, for those who are joining us, Lime City Radio, our show basically pays homage to two DJs that were very important to us here in Los Angeles, named Mark and Brian. They were here for 25 years, and they recently got into the Radio Hall of Fame. So our show is pretty much based on their show. So if you enjoy it, that's the reason why. So, well, we get some of these things, too, and why we mention those names often. Here we go. Okay. Hey, gang. Just wanted to say thank you for interviewing Stacey Lane Wilson and letting us know about the movie regarding The Ventures. I've been a fan of their music since I was a kid and have learned to play guitar because of them. Didn't know about the movie till I heard your show. So thank you again, and I'm buying a signed copy of the movie by Don Wilson. So that's from listener Gary.
That's awesome.
So
great
that's
job,
it.
Gary.
Yeah, absolutely, man. Let's see. To Sean, Steve, Amber, and producer Zach. Been listening for some time now. I just wanted to thank you guys for keeping the laughter going this past year. I have two podcasts that keep me going. Friday, I listen to Mark and Linda, and Saturday, I listen to you guys. Thanks for keeping all the M&B holiday traditions alive. The Elvis Christmas greeting, dropping of the Yule log, Silver Bells with Steve Martin, all of it. We really needed all those things this past year, listener Robert.
Great job, Robert.
So thank you, Robert.
Yeah.
To everyone on Your Weekly Dose, just want to say a quick thank you for what you guys do. I only found out about you guys this year because of M&B getting into the Radio Hall of Fame and saw that you guys posted about it. True, you guys aren't M&B, but you guys try extremely hard to give us the same type of show. And with that, I say great job and tip my hat.
Maybe a little too hard.
Thank you.
Maybe. You never know.
At times.
Yeah, and that's from listener Mary. So, great. Thank
Mary.
You, guys.
We'll try harder, Mary.
Yeah, absolutely. So, it's good to know. I mean, you know, we get these emails every now and then. People let us know what they think of the show, which is great. And love it.
It astounds me that there are people out there who actually listen to our show.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's so cool. You know, you sit here in our little studio and we talk and have a good time. You know, we know we're broadcasting out there, but to have people respond to it to me is just the most special thing.
And then to meet listeners also,
yes,
here in Southern California, you know, and everything, you know, it's just amazing that we've not become close friends with some of these people, too.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we see them at events or we're friends with them on Facebook or something or whatever, or There's another common event that we all go to, and we go, we meet them there or something. Yeah. Yeah. So it's really nice. It is. And, you know, understand that we're carrying a certain tradition here overall, but also being our own show at the same token. So it is surprising, but at the same token, I knew it would work. And that's why we're here, and we love it.
That is why.
So, yeah. Yep.
Yeah.
All right. I think we got our connections ready for our guest, right?
Yep.
Okay, let's go ahead and do that then. Today's guest is a man of many talents. He's worked with those who have great talent as well. He is the author of two best-selling books. He has been responsible for some of the most original, successful, and exciting live shows and tours ever brought to the stage. And he is the founder of something that he holds dear to his heart, the Rock and Roll Fantasy Camp, which celebrates this year its 25th anniversary. And by doing so, they have a documentary coming out this Friday regarding the organization. Please welcome to our program, Mr. David Fischoff.
Hi, gentlemen. How are you?
Yeah, there he is.
Yeah.
Whoa. I never got such an applause.
David, how are you today?
You know, I'm doing great. You know, I think we're living in some crazy times, but I'm excited to be able to share good, fun, and uplifting to the world.
Absolutely. Wonderful. Well, you know, I've known you for many, many years because of something that you've done. We'll discuss that later. You've led a very, very interesting life overall. So let's kind of go back to the beginning with you. You started off being a sports agent, first off. Why did you choose to get into that type of business?
So let me take you before that, when I was a booking agent in the Catskill Mountains. And I was booking comedians like Henny Youngman and Jack Carter and,
whoa,
you know, and all those great Jen Murray and Maury Amsterdam. Really, that's where,
wow,
I really started my career. I started in the Catskills. And it's so interesting because I guess I learned a lot about packaging there, because we used to buy the artists, you know, for 50 shows and for the, over the summer, and then tell them, okay, you're going to work, you're going to headline the Concord Hotel, and then you're going to work a little bungalow colony, and then you got paid the same amount of money. So, my business, you know, I started the Catskills. And from there, I was writing for a newspaper, and I interviewed Ron Bloomberg, who was the center fielder for the New York Yankees. He was the DH. He was the first DH in baseball.
Uh-huh.
And I was thinking of camp, and at the camp, they had these professional ball players come up to visit. And I said to the owner one day, I said, I'm going to go meet Rob Bloomberg. Would you mind if I'm going to book you a baseball player? And he says, go ahead. So I asked Bloomberg if he would do the appearance. He says, no. He says, the guy over there in the corner, Elliot Maddox, who was injured for the center fielder, he said he can do it. He says, I got too much rehab to do. So I met Elliot Maddox, and we're driving up to the mountains. And that's when I started. I said, hey, you know, I'd love to represent you. And I was 20 years old, and then he introduced me to Lou Piniella, and who introduced me to, you know, Bobby Mercer and so many great athletes.
Wow.
Over the years. So, you know, back then, you know, if you did a great job for one, they share locker rooms together. And
right.
So they tell the other one, hey, this guy, you know. So, you know, I one time I was representing 9 of the New York Giants, because they, you know, they all spread the word that, you know, David's my agent. He's doing a great job. And so, you know, the 86, 87 Super Bowl, I had 9 members of the team, and that's how the business went in the sports business. It was fun, you know. The sports business is great, and very challenging, very interesting.
I bet.
Did you continue doing the musical bookings after you became an agent, or did you just stop that for a while?
So I stopped doing the Catskills, naturally, doing the ball players, but I was booking corporate club dates for companies that wanted entertainment. So I started booking companies, IBM and Xerox, and I would still do those kinds of things. I was doing players' endorsements. I was doing their contracts. I was doing marketing. And then one day, it was 1983, I get a phone call, because I was in the newspaper all the time I was representing Vince Ferragamo, and we were negotiating his contracts. So, you know, when you're in the sports pages all the time, someone called me up and said, would I be interested in representing the association? And I said, the association of what? I've never heard of the association. And they said, no, the band, they, what are the hits? And they said, Windy and Never My Love and Long Cause Mary. And I remember going out to the record store and listening to them. And I said, oh, yeah, I know these songs from the dentist's office. And and I was sharing Office Space at the time with Shep Gordon, who was a manager, and Meatloaf's manager, and who else was up there? There was, yeah, you know, the guy sitting across from me, he managed the Talking Heads, the Ramones, Blondie. Oh, his name was Gary Kerfus. He was a giant in our business. And I was there representing ballplayers, and we were all sharing office space in our accountant's office. And I saw these gold records on the wall, and I just saw these artists. And you know, these guys were envious that I was representing all the ballplayers. And I was envious that they had gold records on the wall and they were doing the show business. You know how it is. Everybody wants what the other person doesn't have.
Right.
And I said to myself one day, I want to be like them. And so when the guy called me about the association, I got excited and I ran out to L.A. I met the band and they said to me, you know, would you want to be our manager? Our manager for many years is no longer, you know, we fired him. And I said, sure. And I knew nothing. I knew nothing what I was doing. But I said, I'll take them on. And because I wanted to be in show business. So I'll give it a shot. I come back to New York and I sit down with they were part of the William Morris agency at the time. I sit down with all the agents there who I'd known because I was booking corporate shows, you know, so I would buy from William Morris. And they all turned to me and said, are you nuts? Why would you want to represent the association? I said, you know, you got 35 of the biggest athletes in New York, and why would you want that? And I said, you know, I want to be in tennis. I like this, and it's fun. I'll tell you why. The people always ask me why is it fun? I said, you know, when you're a sports agent, it's all about show me the money, and right. You know, and the advocates is to get the biggest contract for your player, and so you know, and once you do that. You know, you get credit and you get a lot of, you know, people love that. And then if you get a guy a big contract, then you get more clients. So, but I found in doing that over the years, I remember negotiating a baseball contract for a particular player. And, you know, one team offered me $20 million, another team offered me $25 million. But the team that offered me the $25 million was, the team that offered me the $25 million was in Canada. And the player was from Seattle. Seattle offered $20 billion. And I'm saying to myself, I said to the player, where would you, where, you know, he says, I want to play in Seattle. I want to play in front of my parents, my family. But the Players Association was putting the pressure on him and said, no, you got to go for the $25 million. Because if you take the $25 million, then the next player will get $30 million. And they're always pushing that. They're always pushing that.
Wow.
So I found that it was really, it was, you know, wasn't even where the player could play. And he was being ruled by the association, and you know, rightfully so. They want to get the salaries up,
right.
But I needed to. It just wasn't. It got to be the point where you could. I remember saying to Phil Simms one night, I was watching a Monday night football game that Tuesday morning. I'll never forget. Mark Bavaro, he throws the ball to Bavaro. Bavaro catches the ball. He runs down, and then he falls down right by the 5-yard line. And I said, Phil, I said, why didn't Bavaro go in the end zone? And he said, shut up, Bishop. What do you know about football? He had the fastest guy in the NFL running after him. He did the right thing, tucked the ball in, didn't fumble it. So that's what I learned. You know what? All I could do is make these people money. I can't even say anything. So,
right.
Whereas it was the entertainment business, you could come up with an idea and you can be creative. So at the time, I took on the association, and everyone said to me, you know what, there's nothing we can do, David. There's no money here. And so that's when I came up with a concept of putting packages together, like, and going to other bands. And I started asking these people to book these shows, and they did. William Morris did me a big favor. They booked it, and all these other bands started calling me, like Gary Puckett and the Union Gap and then the Turtles. And that's when I came up with the idea to put them, package them all together, and put together the Happy Together tour in 1984.
Wow.
So you became the clearinghouse for all the 60s bands.
I became the clearinghouse. You're absolutely right. They all came to me, from Tommy James and the Shondells and and the Bombas of Papas, and I was booking them and packaging them. And, you know, that was before anybody ever made a comeback or anything like that. Right.
David, this is because I'm old. And you've had this career since you, like you said, from 20 years old on. And for some reason, I keep thinking back when you were talking about representing or booking these old comedians up in the Catskills and stuff. And I remember being so appreciative of those comedians back in the 50s and 60s and stuff. And you mentioned Henny Youngman and Maury Amsterdam and stuff. Is there like one time back then when you were doing that you had an experience that made you feel like, you know what, this is exactly what I should be doing right now? I mean, like with a particular comedian or an act or something back then that kind of kept you inspired?
So it's a great question, because there's deep inside of me, we all have our dreams, and you know, I wish I could be a comic. I mean, I get wow. these guys to get up on, listen, it's one thing to get up on stage, sing a song, get an applause. And you know, some people, I've seen terrible people get an applause after singing a song. But to make people laugh, that's such an art. And, yeah. you know, the fun part is at Rock Camp, I get to enjoy that as being the host of the camp and emceeing and come up with some lines. But I love comedy. I think comedy is really what keeps me going. And it's so funny because a day doesn't go by that I'm quoting, you know, Freddie Roman or Henny or Rodney Dangerfield or, you know, yeah. Every one of those. It's my way of talking. And, it's just the way of who I am, and is, you know, sometimes my kids say, Dad, you're never serious. And I said, you know, a comedy. So the way it really gets it, where it comes from is my dad. My dad was the youngest of 12. He survived Auschwitz. He survived Buchenwald.
Wow.
There's a book called The Yellow Star. And it's about five guys who meet in Auschwitz. And they're from a little town called Bratislava in Czechoslovakia. And they basically survived the camps together. And throughout the book, all they talk about is my father being the funny one, my father having the sense of humor. And that's the sense of humor is what kept him going and basically kept him alive throughout throughout his times in the concentration camps. So it was that, it was some music, and but holding on to that comedy and making jokes and is what really kept him in his survival. So I've seen humor my whole life in my house, and then being the youngest of 12, Dad was funny, and I all those comics I identify with. I love to even go back and watch Catskills on Broadway, you know, guys like Mousy Lawrence, Freddie Roman, Dick Capri. These comics are just, you know, they don't make them like that today. You know, they don't make these. You know, there was a guy named Larry Best. He used to come out, and all of a sudden a whole mouthful of Chiclets would come out of his mouth. And he would say, I just came from the dentist. I mean, the humor that these people had up in the Catskills. And you know, it was also the hardest audiences to work because, you know, when they buy a ticket to a show, they sit there, they entertain, they laugh. But when these people in the Catskills, they eat three meals a day and it was unlimited food. Now, you know, every comic has to get on stage at 10:30 at night and try to make people laugh. Well, they were stuffed. They were outdoors the whole day. They were afraid to laugh because they were afraid all the food would come out. So these guys and gals had to be so funny that they were so funny that when they ended up going on the road, you know, Tom Jones took Freddie Roman out, Engelbert Humperdinck took Dick Capri. These big stars with Paul Anka, they would take these comics from the Catskills because they would entertain for a half hour before they would get on stage, and they were funnier than anybody because they knew how to entertain. You know, in the Catskills, I always made a joke. I said, people sat back. They would sit back at night and say, come on, entertain me. I dare you to make me laugh. I dare you to make me laugh. I'm not going to laugh. You know why? Because I didn't pay for the ticket. It was included in the $100 a day.
You know, it's so.
So you know what? I don't have to laugh.
David, you were responsible for one of the biggest tours in 1986. And that was putting together the reunion of the Monkees, a very beloved TV show. And where did the idea come from on putting these guys back together?
In 1985, I'm staying in a hotel in Kansas City, and it's 2 o'clock in the morning. And because I had taken 30 rooms at the hotel for all the artists, they thought they were doing me a favor and giving me the top penthouse of the Kansas City Holiday Inn. And it was so big, I couldn't sleep. And I decided to watch television all night. And up pops at 2 o'clock in the morning on Monkees TV show. And I said, wow, the Monkees. I remember the Monkees because I was a fan of the Monkees because my parents let me watch the TV show.
Right.
So I said, they'd be great for my next year's package. Well, I contacted, I called to try to find out who represents them. And it turns out that the name the Monkees is owned by Columbia Pictures. So I called Columbia Pictures. And I called them at L.A., and the president said to me, who knew me because I was a sports agent, so they always saw my name in the headlines. He said, call the guy in New York. I called the guy in New York, and I licensed the name the Monkees. And then I went to sign Peter Tork, who I invited to see a show, and he took me to meet Mickey Dolenz, so it took me to meet Davy Jones. And in 1986, unbeknownst to me, I'm on the 7th floor at 1775 Broadway. On the 8th and 9th floor is MTV. Well, I run upstairs to say hello to Bob Pittman, who was running the network at the time. And I said, Mr. Pittman, I'm David Fischoff, and we always see each other in the elevator. And I'm doing the Monkees, and you've decided to air it 24 hours a day. And he said, I thought you were the sports agent. I said, yeah, I am. He said, sit down, kid. Well, I sit down, and he says to me, how did you promote my new fledgling network? And all your ads, MTV, a scene on MTV, and I'll promote you on television. And the Monkees had Monkees Tour.
Wow.
So I said, okay, that's fair. And I put tickets on sale, and I sold 40,000 tickets in Chicago. Now, we used to sell 2,000 for these Happy Together tours. We sold 36,000 seats in Detroit. Every little girl was waiting online for Monkee tickets, and they would come home and the mothers would say, where were you all night? Mommy, I got Monkee tickets. I was waiting online all night to get Monkee tickets. And the mothers would yell at them, I want to go. I love the Monkees.
Yeah.
And these kids didn't know it was a 20-year-old band. They didn't know.
Now, David, I had heard a couple of stories a little bit about how that tour also got put together. And please correct me if I'm wrong, because obviously we're speaking to the coming from the horse's mouth, so to speak. I had heard that Gary Puckett and Hermits were already booked for the tour. And you were trying to figure out who else was celebrating 20 years of being in the business.
You know, I think I had the grassroots. Rob Grill was on that tour also.
Yeah.
I was putting together, right. I was putting together, I had Gary on a tour before. Uh-huh. I went to Hermits, definitely one of them. And,
right.
It was so funny because it was going to be just four bands, and it was going to be equal. All of a sudden, the Monkees on MTV crazy.
That's what I wanted to ask, because I had heard that the Monkees were actually going to be an opening act. But when ticket sales started to come through and everything just shot through the roof, and they got moved from an opening act to the headliner. That's not true.
You know, the Monkees had never been on tour. They were television personalities, and I would have definitely. They were always going to be the closing act, and they were my favorites, and so I would have made sure they would be the closing acts.
Uh-huh.
And you know, the other acts had already toured, so while the Monkees being new and fresh, I would definitely would have made them the headliners.
Got it. Now, I know Michael didn't join them for the whole tour itself. He only did a couple of shows with them and everything. Was it difficult to try and convince all four of them to try and do this tour, though, overall? Or
no.
Was it fairly easy?
I didn't even try to get Mike Nesmith. Everyone told me his mother invented liquid paper, and he'll never do it, and he's so rich. And to be honest with you, as long as I had Mickey, Davey, and Peter, and had that logo, the Monkees, I didn't even approach him. And he did finally, call me, and he agreed to show. He wanted to show up to the Greek Theater.
Right.
And so he showed up to the Greek Theater, and I'll be honest with you, I had problems with the band because, you know, Davey was upset, and he says, you know, it's very nice you want to come and perform in L.A. in front of all his friends and everything, but he didn't, you know, let him come out to, you know, Texas and let him come out to, you know, Iowa, where we were really performing. So, but, you know, Davey was nice, and you know, I think, you know, he said fine, and you know, so he got up there on stage. But honestly, he meant nothing. The guy meant absolutely nothing. People were buying tickets for the Monkees, and they, you know, he came for his own benefit, to be honest with you. Mm-hmm. He came, but it was so great. He brought his Hollywood friends and everything. And but he didn't come because, you know, he wanted to reunite with the Monkees. You know, he was always denying the Monkees, always feeling better than the Monkees. And you know, only after Davey died would he go on tour and call himself the Monkees. So
right,
that's the truth.
And of course, we also lost Peter last year as well too, which was a major blow to us.
Blow. He was great. Peter was a real great guy.
But just for the nostalgia's sake of it, from a fan who grew up with the reruns of the Monkees, though I know Steve actually got to watch when they came on the air.
Yeah.
I grew up with the reruns. You know, I was there for the 20th anniversary when Michael was there. And just to put on that production from a fan, I want to say thank you for coming up with that idea.
Well, thank you. How'd you like the horns? Yeah, that was my idea. The Monkees never played with horns.
It was a phenomenal show, and the rest of
phenomenal show,
and the rest of the tours, the Here We Come Again tour, and then after that, you know, I mean, it kept them going, and new vitality, I think, with them overall, and it gave a proof on why the producers of that TV show put these four strangers together, and these individuals.
They were geniuses. The way Burnt and Burnt Ray, the way they got the music, they got their best music, the way they put these four amazing characters. And, you know, again, it's like they gave you happiness. Whenever you think the Monkees, you just smile. And it's such a great feeling to be a Monkee fan.
Yeah.
And I'm hoping one day that the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame will recognize all four of these guys because they did as much to rock and roll music. Listen, they sold more seats. They sold more tickets than the Beatles.
Yeah,
more records those years than the Beatles. The phenomena of the Monkees was just incredible. And
very true.
Yeah,
very true.
And the music's amazing. You know, I'm really excited because in the film, in Rock Camp, the film, you're gonna see there's some great Monkee footage. Neil Diamond cleared the song. I'm a Believer.
Wonderful.
And there's a great scene of me on the tour bus, and you know, I reminisce about that tour, and that was life changing really for me. And
I bet.
I'm excited for everyone to see the movies and to see you know that part of my career because you know, like people love the Catskills and they're talking about that, but to me, the era of the Monkees was just life changing. And I'll tell you why. What was so amazing about that? Then they never got the recognition. If you look back then, none of these bands like the Rolling Stones, like Fleetwood Mac, none of these bands got back together. And only when the Monkees got successful in that year did so many managers tell me, my band called up and said, well, if the Monkees could do it, so could we. And all of a sudden, you saw an influx of the Rolling Stones coming back.
Aerosmith.
All these bands, the line was, if the Monkees could do it, so could we.
Right.
And all of a sudden, when they saw how hot they were on MTV, then all of a sudden Aerosmith and you know, got together with Run DMC.
That's
they
right. Realized I remember that.
They realized that the Monkees was, I don't care what anyone says, and I have no names here, but I know several bands who got together because of that. The Monkees. Yeah.
Well, let's move on to something a little bit different now.
Okay, great.
And then we'll get into the camp and everything. But you, something that blew my mind too is that you also did 8 tours of Ringo Starr and his All Star Band. How did that idea come about? Who came up with it? And how did you put that whole thing together?
Well, following the Monkees, I came up with the idea to do a Dirty Dancing live tour.
Which my wife is very grateful for.
Well, that was fun. I came up with the idea when I was watching the movie and just reminded me of the Catskills and just, you know, I really understood it. And together with Dennis Arfa, a great agent, and we produced this amazing package. I came up with Dirty Dancing. And, you know, my business model back then was, you know, before Live Nation, I would go to companies and I would say, hey, would you be interested in sponsoring a tour? And we'd do 100 shows and you can do meet and greets. And, you know, the Monkees, I had Chunkies. And then with the Monkees, I think it was, then I had Chunkies and I had Mountain Dew. And, you know, the idea was to get a corporate sponsor.
Right.
And because you needed help to, you know, pay for the freight of the tours. And back then, the Stones got them, and whoever could get a sponsor was great. And so after doing Dirty Dancing, which was a huge success for the Pepsi Corporation because they own Mountain Dew, and for example, and back then what they would do is they would take the tickets from Dirty Dancing, go to 7-Eleven and say, hey, here's tickets to the show, but you got to put our product in the front of your stores. So that's, it was that barter that they would use them for. So the president of Pepsi at the time, who came up with the idea of the Pepsi Generation, contacted me and he said, you know, we had a lot of success. Would you be interested in, you know, we want to do your next tour. And, you know, what do you want? And I gave him a number and I said, I'll come up with a concept for you. And that's when I came up with the concept of, you know, Ringo and the All-Star Band. And I wrote a letter to his lawyer. And about 3 months later, he responded and he said, we talked about it, and he said, why don't you come over to meet Ringo and pitch him on your idea?
Well,
so I went to England, and back then we didn't have cell phones. It was 89. And I remember staying in my hotel room every day, reading every Beatle book I could read. If he asked me a question, I was outlining him, I was studying. And, and then he said to me, you know, come in on Monday. I can't let you know what day, but we'll call you. And so I never left my room because I was afraid to miss the call. And what happened was I finally got a call on Thursday. How about coming in Friday morning? So I went to the office Friday and I pitched them on this idea. I walked in with a radio commercial I had made, an ad, and I said, I have this idea to an all-star band and with these people in it. And he turned to me and said, you know, I had the same idea. And so then he, after my invite pitch, he said, let me think about it. And I think a week later, the lawyer called me and, you know, we talked about talent and that's how that happened. And it was an honor to be able to work with him. And, you know, 15 years of touring, and, you know, I would come up with, I would create a new band all the time, unlike the way they do it now. Because, you know, the promoters, you know, they would put the pressure on me. They wanted new people, and I wanted to keep the franchise going. And so I would come up with new people. And I, you know, and that was the challenge, you know, to always get new people. Now, everybody wanted to play with Ringo, but it was schedules and things like that. But I really enjoyed those years of trying to find the band, put it together, and I got to see the world, and I got to, you know, be around probably the greatest drummer in the world.
Yeah,
but
exactly.
I got married again, had more kids, and I just decided the road, it was enough of the road.
Gotcha.
And but it was amazing. It was really an honor. It really, you know.
Yeah, and I mean,
I learned a lot about life too.
Yeah, and Ringo had some just amazing, amazing people with him. I mean, everybody from Joel Walsh to Jack Blades to Simon Kirk play with him. I mean, it's the who's who.
Well, you know, it's interesting. Well, they had two different bands. That was quite interesting. So Jack Blades played with his, never went on tour with us. Jack Blades played on his records. So Ringo separated his records and his touring bands. You know, now he's put them all together. But back then, he kept it all separate. And but everybody, you know, there's not one musician out there who wouldn't want the opportunity to jam with Ringo. And, you know, rightfully so. And And he's, you know, for him, it's all about the band.
Right.
Not
right.
about himself.
Did anybody ever kind of come up and go, really, it's not Paul, it's Ringo? I have to play with Ringo and not Paul?
You know what? They with a little help of my friends, you know, so.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that was great. And for him, I think this all-star band has been the greatest thing for him. You know, he's been in it longer than the Beatles. It's been his band and his audience, and he's entertained so many people, and he's been able to spread his message of life, which is peace and love.
Yeah, exactly. And you know what, David? I got to tell you a secret here. Being a local musician myself and everything, a number of years back, when I started to step out of a band format and kind of go be a solo artist, I was thinking, geez, how in the hell am I going to put a band together? What am I going to do? Whatever, because I couldn't pay them or anything, you know, with the pay-to-play stuff and going on. And I actually took your idea and Ringo's idea of having an all-star band and got friends of mine who were in other bands and asked them, could you help me perform? And basically, you guys can sell your CDs at my shows and stuff, and I'll promote you guys too and everything and so forth. And for about a good 5-year run, it worked so well. So I got to thank you on that idea as well.
Oh, that's great. That's great. Yeah, I know a lot of people have done it. You know, I know a camper of mine is doing it now. He's got a band, and he's put together a drummer from this group and a keyboard player from Queen. And, you know, Ringo, yeah. But listen, you know, I think Joe Walsh did it best. He says, you know, we have a democratic band. Whatever Ringo says, we do. And,
exactly.
Yeah, it's Ringo.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Well, that's a good impression.
Hey, there you go, Steve.
Yeah. I'll change jobs.
David, let's talk about something that's very dear and close to your heart now. And that's the rock and roll camp that you've got, the Rock and Roll Fantasy Camp. It's celebrating 25 years. This coming yesterday, which is Friday, the film has come out now, a documentary about this whole experience and everything. Tell us about the camp, how it came about, and what are we going to see in this new film?
So the camp idea came about when I was on my fourth show with Ringo and the All-Star Band. And people didn't believe. I mean, every day I would get an email from people and they would say to me, this is never going to work. This idea is not going to work. You know, it's not going to work because you have all these all-stars coming together and, you know, it never worked. It could work for Live Aid. We could bring bands together, but to tour a band with a member of the band, with Dr. John, to Billy Preston, Nils Lofgren, to bring all these people together, managers, agents, business managers, wives, it's never going to work. It's going to end in a war. And so at the fourth show, I'm sitting backstage at the Garden State Arts Festival, and you'll see this in the film. And all of a sudden, I'm trying to sell the show to Radio City, because Ringo said, oh, I'd love to play Radio City. So I asked the president to come down to see the show. And we're having dinner, and all of a sudden, Dils Lofgren walks by, and he says, Fischoff, I'm out of here. I said, what's going on? A second later, Clarence Clemens says, Fischoff, I'm out of here. Now, I mortgaged my home to put up the money for that tour. I had a beautiful townhouse in Manhattan. I just, you know, listen, we're promoters. We go for it. We take chances. And it only works, you know, if you take chances. And you know, so what happened was that I said, what's going on? And Clarence says to me, there's so much fighting in this band. It's never going to work. Joe Walsh and Levon Helm are having the biggest fight, and you have to go down there and straighten it out. So I'm going to straighten it out. I'm a little kid compared to these guys. Let me go find Ringo. They're his band, and let him straighten the fighting out. Last thing I know, I'm going to talk about music with all these geniuses. So
right.
I didn't know where Ringo was. I couldn't find him. They said, you better go in that dressing room. I go in the dressing room, and there's Levon Helm with a knife. And blood on his chin. And there's Joe Walsh with a glass bottle. And they're having a fight. And screaming at each other. And in the end, they both turned around. They stuck their tongue out at me. And they had fake blood. The bottle was made out of glass. And the knife was a rubber knife.
Oh, my God.
Jim Keltner was filming the entire the entire episode there. And, you know, you see all these rockers watching me get scared, and I'm screaming, "Are you a bunch of babies?" And all I could see was my house going down the river and me losing everything. And this is Joe Walsh and Levon Helm. They played the biggest prank on me.
Oh, my God.
You know, so after walking away and feeling like, oh, God, I almost got a heart attack, I said, you know, these guys are nuts. They're having so much fun. Yeah. And then I kept going on the tour, and I was the only one besides, you know, it was me and all these artists, no wives, no managers. It was just the band.
That's
and
cool.
I saw how much fun that these people had, and I kept saying to myself, if only somebody could see this and witness this, it would be incredible. And that's how I came up with the idea of Rock and Roll Fantasy Camp. And I did my first camp in 96, 97 in Florida. It was a disaster. I got a lot of media. You know, we announced it, and everybody got on. The media was incredible. Jay Leno, the minute I announced it, he said they got this Rock and Roll Fantasy Camp for $5,000. You could jam with a bunch of B-rock stars. He said for $5,500, you could check yourself in the Betty Ford Clinic. Jam with some A-rock stars. And we were getting nailed every night, and he was making fun. But it was great. The publicity came out. I did my first camp in Florida, and I got 15 campers, but I had 50 reporters. 50 people from the media came out. It was People Magazine. It was a Delta Airlines sent a reporter. The MTV sent a reporter. It was unbelievable. And I had 15 campers. I had about 8, 9, 10 rock stars. And again, it's all in the film, so it's incredible for people to see the first camp. And I'm walking through the lobby, and the second day, and all these reporters are sitting around in the lobby of the hotel, and they turn to me and say, "Come here, Fisher." I like, walk over there, and they said, "You know, we were just talking. We were going to skewer you and write the worst thing, but this camp's amazing. These people are having so much fun. They're taking it so serious. We love this idea." And they all gave me rave reviews. People Magazine, 4 pages.
Right.
Everyone talked about this. But I lost my shirt, and I decided not to do it again. And then in the year 2000, I'm at the Polestar Awards in West Hollywood. And they're playing a game called Who Wants to Be a Millionaire? And the Polestar Awards are basically an awards ceremony for the people in the music industry, managers, agents, best tours, live touring.
Right.
And they were playing this game, Who Wants to Be a Millionaire? And with Sammy Hagar, Tommy Lee, Tommy Shaw, I think they were the three of them were up there. And I was watching and I was leaving. And one of the questions was, who created Rock and Roll Fantasy Camp? David Bowie, David Byrne, David Fischoff. And I think it was Sammy Hagar yelled out, David Fischoff. And I couldn't believe it. I turned around and they were talking about this camp. I said, wow, they remember this camp. And, you know, for me, it was a disaster. So then I said to myself, you know what? Let me try it again. Let me give it one more try. And I got a call from Eric Sherman from VH1 Classic at the time, and they said, "Hey, we'd love to get behind this, and we think this is great and a good idea. So we'll help you promote it." And then I got on the phone and I called all these artists that I met backstage at Ringo shows, or people I'd met over the years, whether it was Bret Michaels or George Thorogood, and I said, "I'm doing this camp. Would you come and do it second time?" And they came, and then the biggest challenge was Ron Delsner. I'll never forget, the promoter in New York turned to me after seeing the camp. He says, "You got to go bigger, bigger, bigger." And I said, "You mean like Roger Daltrey, who?" He says, "Yeah." He says, "Get the biggest star you can get." So I went and I contacted Roger, who had done the tour, and basically went over to England to see him and pitched my idea to him. And I had to explain to him what it is, and I'll never forget. I said to him, "Who would be someone that you'd want to meet? Who would be someone you'd want to play with?" He says, "You introduced me to Levon Helm. I'll do your camp." And so I got Levon because we were friendly from the Ringo tour. And he came to the camp. And so once Roger Daltrey did the camp, I really got a lot of great publicity.
Yeah.
And I have done this for 25 years. For me, the rock camp is really a process of bringing people in and watching their lives change. Through the power of music. And that's really what the film is about. I'm really proud of the film. Doug Blush, who did 20 Feet from Stardom, Jeffrey Rowe, who is a great producer from VH1, together they made an authentic, a great film, and I will show you the lives of the people going through the camp and everyone, how their lives have changed with the aid of these amazing rock stars. And you'll, in the end, you'll be surprised because everyone's lives get changed.
No, I mean, you again have done a wonderful thing here. And, you know, again, this is why I know who you are. And it just wasn't because of putting the monkeys together or whatever. That was the beginning of it for me. But for you to do this rock and roll fantasy camp, I mean, it is just amazing. And I think what the fun of it for these rock stars is they get to be musicians again. They get to hand down their experience that they've had of touring and what it's like to be in a real rock band, so to speak. And and I think it reminds them of why they got into the business in the first place.
You know, Nancy Wilson said to me one line that really stuck with me. She said, you know, David, we started working hard making music, and we really put our passion into it. And then once you make it, you know, it becomes about lawsuits. It becomes about lawyers, agents, managers, you know, everything. And he said, the one thing you have in your camp is pure music. And I think that's why all the rock stars love it. It's all about the music. And, you know, I was telling somebody today that one of the things that's always been very exciting for me is I asked the celebrities to come in, the big names to come in for a few hours and jam with every band. But the irony is Nick Mason stayed for 4 days because he really enjoyed playing music. He got to play with Mickey Dolenz. So I never got to play a monkey song. So
exactly.
He, you know, and I'll never forget that one. Or Bill Wyman stayed in, you know, for 12 hours and Slash, he jammed an hour with each band. And you know, in the film, Sammy Hagar says, this is the hardest work I've ever had to do. It's hard. Roger Daltrey said, it's hard because, you know, they're so used to doing a show and knowing the routine. And now all of a sudden you're taking these people out of routine and you're making them sing with bands that some aren't so good, some are okay.
Right.
But, you know, I love what Roger says. It's about fun, about having fun. And you know, we're in a society today where we're living. That's why I'm so excited about releasing this film now, you know, because the film, from the minute it starts to the end, just takes you straight up. It's not one of those behind the musics where, you know, band made it and it was so great. And then all of a sudden, they lost everything and they climb back up again. This movie will take you from the beginning to the end and you'll fly with it. And it's really, it's going to give people a lot of hope. It will give people hope in the way that they can change their lives and do anything they want, not just be a musician. If you want to build an app, if you want to change careers, but show how these people have passion, and there's nothing like the power of music.
Right. Oh no, I totally agree with you there. And I mean, some of the people that you've had on through these 25 years. I mean, just to name a few: Ace Frehley, Michael Anthony, Lita Ford, Matt Sorum, the great producer and engineer Eddie Kramer. You mentioned Bret Michaels, Sammy Hagar, Phil Collin from Def Leppard. The Ramones drummer, Marky Ramone, Paul Stanley, Duff McKagan, Mark Hudson. I mean, the list goes on and on and
Jeff
on.
Jeff Beck, to me, was probably the greatest honor to have. I mean, he's probably like the greatest musician ever on guitars. And, you know, he was, what a thrilling, what an honor. Brian Wilson, I mean, Def Leppard. I mean, the musicians have just been. You know, I got a kick out. Everyone says, oh, which camp is best? I said, the next one is going to be, they're all going to get better and better and better.
Yeah, exactly.
And they're all so exciting. Just to see the passion that these artists have been able to give back. And
that's just
really, and that's what the film, I'm telling you, the film, it's so amazing because the way they captured, you'll never see Gene Simmons that way. You'll never see Paul Stanley. You'll never see any of these musicians in an environment, and if you love rock and roll and you love these people, you'll see a whole totally other side. Rock camp, these rockers come and they stay for 4 days, 5 days, because they realize that they look at these people like themselves, and many of them just are so. And these rockers, I mean, not blowing smoke, but they've experienced more than most people.
Oh yeah,
and
very true.
And for them to share their, you know, to share their knowledge. And I don't mean to plug, but, you know, we're running these master classes every night.
And that's what I was going to ask about you next, too. Yeah.
I'll tell you why they're amazing. And they're amazing. We had Steve Cropper on last night. Roger Daltrey's doing another one. Here's why they're different. Normally, listen, I'm doing your show. I'm doing this podcast because I'm trying to promote my film.
Right.
So naturally, you know, we're always promoting. We're always promoting a record. The artist promoting a tour. These masterclasses are basically the artists coming on and giving their knowledge and talking for, well, we advertise 60 minutes, but they're all staying on for 2 hours. Just like Alice Cooper said, I have nowhere to go. And they are giving information to these artists, to these people that I've never heard before. And they are just giving and giving and giving. And, you know, you hear Alice Cooper being honest and saying to people, you know what? It's about the song. It's about the song. And you see Mike Klink giving them recording advice. They're asking questions to these people and say, you know, help me. Tell me, you know, the key to success. All of them have passion. That's the one thing I got to tell you. They all carry the passion for the business. But, you know, we had Desmond Child.
Oh, come on. God.
And Desmond Child said, I'm willing to do this. Let's pick 15 songs. 15 people to submit their songs. I will break down their songs a half hour each for three different sessions.
Wow.
And I want to tell you something. He gave 3 hours a night for three nights.
Holy
it was
cow.
The most entertaining, most brilliant. And, you know, I had people call me up, I'll get you $2,000. I said, nope, he's not doing it. He's giving you 15 songs, and this is the price, and then you can listen, play to listen. If I tell you, the knowledge that he gave people, and he challenged all these people to come back and write another song. But he entertained me for 3 hours straight. And every night, to hear these people tell the stories, they're not pushing a record. They're not pushing a performance. All they're doing is giving knowledge, and more knowledge. And there's nothing like the knowledge of even like our parents. Were our parents smarter than us? Yes, because age, if you've done it, you know, they know more than we
right.
know.
They got the experience behind it, exactly. That's what it is.
Nothing like the experience.
COVID has obviously hit this industry extremely hard last year, continuing into this year. And, of course, that is how you also came up with these master classes, because you did a pivot from doing the rock and roll camps going to these online type interviews with these all these wonderful artists and everything. When we finally do get this whole thing under control, David, or how quickly do you see the artists getting back out there into the venues? And do you think we'll recover in such a way that it will get back to normal?
So I have such empathy because so many people I know are having it rough. And you know, our master classes, we're giving 5% of our proceeds to Sweet Relief.
Oh, that's
a great charity. It's a great charity, which is helping people. If you download the movie from your local theaters, it's in the 100 theaters. $1 is going to Music Cares. All these organizations are so important for us to support now. You know, because maybe the government might give money to these venues, but people are suffering. There's no question.
Right.
And it's really bad. But I'm hoping that the good news has been that a lot of artists are really recording great songs. And there's going to be a plethora of music coming out. There's also going to be a push of touring that these venues will be busy every night. Now, it might be too much, it's going to be too much. It definitely is going to be too much. But I think that the stock market held out beautifully this past year, and their people did get their homes went up in value. I think the economy is going to flourish, and I think people are going to want to spend money. And if they're smart, if the industry is smart and keeps the ticket prices down to afford people to go see live music, I think the grass is going to be really green. It's going to be really great. I think it's going to be great. And I think once we get through this pandemic and people come out healthy, artists are going to go back out and tour and, you know, they might not do the meet and greets because of the, still fearful.
Right.
But I think they're going to go out and perform. I think we're going to be surprised. A lot of great songs and music, is going to come out, and it's being held back.
Well, before before you go, we do something that we do with all of our guests, and this is something that we call the Island Game. And basically what it is, it's just a small little plethora of questions here where, let's say, you retired and finally you're on this island, this deserted island, and you can only take one candy bar with you. Which one would you take, David?
The Hershey bar with almonds.
Ooh, that's a good one. Yeah. That is a good one. I can never eat Hershey by themselves, but with the almonds... That was it. Okay. Right. This is going to be a tough one for you, David. You could only take one album with you on the island. Which would it be?
Sgt. Pepper's.
That's mine.
That's a go-to. That's a great go-to.
Yeah, it's mine.
Yeah.
Okay. You could only take one movie with you, David. What would it be?
The Jazz Singer with Neil Diamond.
Whoa. Oh, that is a good one. That's really good.
I identify with that story so well. My dad was a cantor.
Ah, okay. Understandable.
Yeah.
What food would you take on the island with you? It could be any kind of food.
Well, lately I've been eating so much halva. So. Yeah, that's my go-to quarantine food.
Halva, okay. All right. You could take one.
But I would say a good pastrami sandwich.
Okay. Or an MLT with a mutton that's nice and lean. you could take one person with you for conversation's sake. It cannot be your spouse or a significant other. Who would you take, David?
Bibi Netanyahu.
Wow. That's a good one. That is a real good one. Okay. Here's a tough one for you, David. You could take one person for sexual gratification. Again, it cannot be your spouse or significant other. Who would you take?
Oh, wow. Oh, wow. I can't answer that.
So many, huh? Yeah.
Yeah, the spouse would get upset.
Nancy Wilson, kids, Lita Ford. Crazy. Who would it be? Who would it be from the camp?
That's a tough question. Probably my trainer on Peloton now.
There you go. Well, David, it has been an honor and a pleasure, and please consider yourself a friend of this program now.
If
there's anything that you want to promote at all whatsoever, please do not hesitate to call us or to call me. We will have you on anytime to discuss whatever comes up, any of the fantasy camps, any of the master classes. Being a musician myself, that is where my heart lies. I can relate to it, so I will definitely be in your corner from this point on, sir.
Well, let's make it easier. You can call me anytime, and even if I have nothing to promote, I really, really enjoyed this tonight because I love the memories, and I love the preparation, and, you know, it's always fun to talk about these things and bring them back, and I love the angle you were coming from on all these things, so... you know, I haven't done many of these podcasts. I've been waiting for the film to promote, but tonight was fun, and I'm glad we shared a lot of monkey stories and a lot of stories from my early career. And thank you so much for having me. And I hope you guys check out the film because I think you'll definitely.
It's right up my alley. It's definitely right up my alley, like I said, David. And you know it. Again, you've just done so many good things to the music community and have given back in so many ways, not just in putting together certain bands and reunions and stuff or whatever, or ideas. But, I mean, the Rock and Roll Fantasy Camp, like I said, that is just something that's truly amazing where I think, again, these guys can be themselves and remember why they got into the industry, which is just for the love of the music itself. You know,
yeah,
and you know, and right now, I'll be honest with you, I've been saving some money here and there every now and then, so I can get to one of these Rock and Roll Fantasy Camps also. Because I'm waiting when you get Richie Sambora on is what I'm waiting for. Because that's the
I've been trying to talk to him. By the way, you know, it's so funny what we used to charge for the camps was we used to be much higher, but today there is the same cost of going on a cruise. They're not as expensive, and you know, they're not as expensive. You know, everyone's talked about how expensive they are. They aren't. They're the price of a cruise. I think the biggest issue that people have is people have been scared to come because they think that how can I play with these superstars? But as you see in the film, they make it so comfortable, and
they do.
And really, it's not the money. It's really been the fear for people, because the money has not been. You know, it really is not super high.
Yeah, so, well, that's great, because
check it out.
You know, absolutely, because like I said, I've met some of these people, you know, that have done. I know, like, Gary Hoey, who is a buddy of mine, has done your camp also.
Oh,
and Gary is such a down to earth guy. You know,
he's unbelievable.
Yeah,
he's only down to earth.
Yeah,
he's an unbelievable person, and he's one of my favorite people.
Yeah, he's, I know, because he's done it several times too, and everything.
Many times, I will call Gary for every camp.
Yeah,
every camp I will call Gary, I will call Gary before I do any camp, because he's just amazing.
Yeah,
he gives them himself.
And he that's just it. Each of these guys, they've got something to give back, and like you said, it's the passion of everything that they talk about. And again, why they got in the industry overall, you know. I know you've also had another buddy of mine, Phil X, who's now in Bon Jovi, you know, done a couple of your camps too. And again, you know, Phil's only a couple of years older than I am, and I know how hard he's worked his butt off to get where he's at, because I remember him being in the band Powder many years ago. And and to get where he's at and to get the call from John himself to replace Richie in the tour, you know, was just an honor for him. And, you know, for me, it was bittersweet being a fan of Bon Jovi, but then going, but one of my friends is playing guitar for John, you know?
I know, right?
And it was great. And again, Phil is just one of those. He's very exuberant, very down to earth, very giving. And that's one thing that I think all of these guys, the bigger the star, the more genuine you find out that they are, and down to earth that they are,
you know,
that's one thing that they all have in common. So you've done just wonderful thing.
So. And I bet you we can talk for 3 more hours.
Absolutely, we can.
Oh yeah,
I can imagine the stories you got, David. I mean,
I have another book coming out, and the title is going to be "Hey Mom, I Could Have Been a Rock Star, But You Made Me Go to Harvard." I'm gonna put them all in there.
I love the second one you have, which is called "Rock Your Business: What You and Your Company Can Learn from the Business of Rock and Roll," and that's the short title, you know. So and then you also got "Putting It on the Line," which was your other book that you wrote, and both wonderful reads. David, once again, thank you so much for coming on our show. Again, please consider you a friend of our program from now on. And if there's anything we can do to help promote or anything, do not hesitate.
Okay.
Yeah. Thank you so much, David. It's been
a
hoot.
Be safe.
You too.
You too. Take care. God bless.
Okay. All the best. God bless.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Oh, God, what a good interview.
That was so much fun. I love talking to him.
God, so good. Yeah. So good. So many stories, you know, so many people that have been on with the Rock and Roll Fantasy Camp and everything. You know, and to come up with the idea, though, for that, you know, they got the sports camps or whatever, you know, why not do it with this? You know, it makes perfect sense to do it with something of this nature. I'm just glad that the prices have come down to that, like, of a cruise.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because
that's kind of cool.
Because you go, okay, well, you can spend anywhere from between, you know, $500 to $1,000 on a cruise, and that's a good chunk of change. But again, you're doing a week of this.
Yeah.
You know, somewhere or whatever. So which is really good.
I enjoyed how far back in time with his experience started way back with, like, old time comedians and stuff like that. And
well, your eyes
so
lit
interesting.
Up.
Oh man, I love stories about the Catskills and the things they did, and a lot of other comedians who are actually no longer alive had a lot of stories about the Catskills and working there. And so to talk to somebody that actually worked with them, and it was awesome.
if you want to see something really cool, I'll have to show it to you. Billy Crystal does a play called 700 Sundays. If you haven't seen it, folks, this thing is really awesome. It's a great play. You can get, you can find the DVD on Amazon, of course.
Oh yeah.
And there's a section in there where he talks about his childhood and going to the Catskills. You know, that's where a lot of people went on vacation, you know, who lived in New York, especially if you're of the Jewish faith. You know, that's the place to go.
Oh, yeah.
And so he talks about that and where there were a lot of famous comedians like you know, David was talking about that had performed there, but also where he got to see Wilt, I think it was Wilt Chamberlain, be a Harlem Globetrotter at the Catskills. Kind of a thing too, you know, and he's got these pictures of it and everything and so forth. And so I'll have to show you that section of it when he talks about that. But yeah, I mean, if you grew up on the East Coast, if you grew up in that New York area, you know, that the Catskills was the place to go. That was your vacation away.
Exactly.
You know? And for us here in Southern California, it's like going to our San Gabriel Mountains, you know, going skiing up there, going camping up there or whatever the case may be, you know. But yeah, I mean, just God, the history that this guy has, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Going from sports to entertainment. I just love the fact he goes, you want to handle the association? What association? No, the group. I was like, oh, okay, yeah.
Who are they?
Yeah, I forgot about those people and everything, so. Anyway, well, we hope you guys enjoyed today's show. We know we had a blast with you. And, oh, I love that piano.
Oh, yeah.
Just take those old records off the shelf.
Gotta love it.
Listen to them by myself.
Gotta love it. So, once again, we hope you guys enjoyed the show today. We do want to thank, again, David Fischoff for joining us today. And please check out the film rockcamp.com. We will be posting all the information on the film as well as the Rock Camps themselves on our website and all of our social media. Check it out. And if you guys are inclined, you know, come on down, join the camp. They are fun. They are a blast. I've seen some in action, and you definitely have a great time with it, that's for sure.
I looked at a bunch of pictures and everything they have, and you can just call it up yourself at the website, and you can see a bunch of pictures of all the really cool magicians.
Magicians?
Yeah.
That's a different camp.
That's a different camp. But all the musicians that played, and the looks on their faces when they're working with just the normal people, they're smiling and laughing and having a good time. I was just really impressed with the fact that it looks like it's something where you're really going to enjoy it.
Well, like I keep saying, like David kept saying too, it's a matter of fact of they get to be musicians again. Mm-hmm. Instead of the rock stars, they get to get back into why they got into the business in the first place.
Yes.
Having fun. So that's pretty much it. All right, you guys, listen, if you want to follow the show, it's pretty simple. Go to our website, yourweeklydose.com. If you want to follow us on Facebook, again, it's Your Weekly Dose. You can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at yourweeklydose1.
You want to follow me, Steve, on Facebook, it's Steve Silva. And on Twitter, it's at SilvaLining69.
And if you want to follow me, Sean, on any of the social media, it's simply Sean R, S-E-A-N-R, Unplugged. That's makes it really simple. So
yeah,
right everywhere. And if you want to follow producer Zach, he has that Zombie Mel Gibson on Instagram, so you can follow him there as well. So in the meantime, guys, you have a good weekend. We will catch you guys next week. Until then, be good to each other, please.
Oh, yeah, have fun, world.
Listening to this week's show. Don't forget to support the show by shopping on Amazon. Just go to our website, yourweeklydose.com, click on the Amazon banner and bookmark, then start shopping. Remember to follow us on Twitter and Instagram at yourweeklydose1 and Facebook at Your Weekly Dose. We'll see you next week.